For zipsportsmedia.com, this is Touchline. Hello everybody and welcome to episode 9 of Touchline with myself, your host Sean Watson, my trusty co-pilot Aaron Flanagan, blue tick verified Aaron Flanagan as I referred to on Twitter a few weeks ago. We're here once again to bring you the latest episode of Touchline. This is the first episode that we have conducted in 2017, so we said it on the last programme, but officially, Happy New Year. We sort of played a bit of a trick on you last time, recorded it before New Year and put it out after New Year. So
yeah, and just kind of guessed about the New Year, kind of scorelines.
I got the 5-0 Middlesbrough at Old Trafford call slightly out, but
yeah,
they nearly won, though.
Nearly.
Should have done. So, yeah, this is our first episode of the New Year. Hope you had a good New Year. Thank you for taking the time to tune in to us once again. The Christmas period and the New Year period, it always is great for English football. As we've discussed on this programme in previous episodes. Aaron, how did you enjoy your Christmas and New Year in terms of the football you saw and went to?
Yeah, well, obviously I watch a lot of non-league. I watch plenty of football across the week. It's nearly a fortnight, isn't it? Really, kind of had a fortnight of watching football. It was good, and what was on TV was, you know, equally as enjoyable, I think, from the Premier League point of view, barring that Middlesbrough-Leicester game, which was truly, truly dreadful. I cannot believe I sat through 90 minutes of that.
Yeah, but I sat through about 9 minutes and thought, no, it's not for me.
No, it was one of them games I was watching. I was thinking, it's going to kick into life here. There's defensive mistakes in both of them. There's, you know, there's so much going to happen, and yeah, it just didn't. And yeah, I can't believe I sat through it. But I went later that afternoon to a better game. I went to Drolsden versus Glossop North End. Hyde United versus Glossop North End. Well, I mean, we get all my teams mixed up now. which was a cracking game of football, a nice derby game. So that made up for it.
Brilliant. Not in favour of the 4-week winter break that's been proposed this week.
Dear Lord. No, I mean, if that's the master plan for us to win the World Cup, then, you know, we seriously need to look at the people running the game and going, how much do you actually know about football?
Yep.
I mean, listen, I think 2 weeks may be reasonable, but I still can't see what the massive gain is.
No. I mean, they'll play, maybe 3 or 4 games in those 2 weeks?
Yeah.
And all it'll do, actually, is push the end of the season back if they have the winter break.
And at the same time, all right, you say you're giving them in a 2-week, 3-week gap, whatever, you're going to say the players are only actually going to have 5-6 days off, and then the clubs are going to want them back in training anyway.
Right.
So they're still going to be playing at like full capacity and, you know, training at that level, and then they're going to play friendly games as well. So they're still going to be playing as well. It's for me, it's just, it's not the answer. Like, the British football over Christmas is one of the great things about, you know, football in our country.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for me, it's one of the most enjoyable times of the year, even though I hate the cold, but you know, you brave it, you go and you watch football, and for me, it's just not the answer, and I really, really hope that, you know, it doesn't get voted through.
How many players actually play 38 Premier League games anyway? Surely they get everybody gets a break in terms of if they're injured or they're rested. No player plays 38 out of 38.
Yeah, or you become Jamie Vardy and get a strategic red card, or, you know, something like that.
Do you know what I've noticed the past 3 or 4 years? Wayne Rooney always seems to be injured over Christmas and New Year.
he's a family man now, isn't he?
Well, this is true, yeah, and he's a role model now and everything else, but I don't think this is coincidental.
Listen, I know from my experience in non-league football that footballers, well, at a lower level, certainly will get themselves sent off, pick up injuries, little niggling injuries, and they will not be available. You'll always find there's a sickness bug passing through the dressing room.
Funny that, isn't
it? At Christmas sort of time, you know, oh, I'm not feeling 100% gaffer. Oh, really? Mm. Sure. So I'm sure it happens at the top level as well.
I'm sure it does. I'm not saying Wayne Rooney's dodging it or anything else. It just seems a bit suspicious.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
coincidental. It's coincidental, isn't it, Wayne? We know it is. If you're listening, which is doubtful, but if you are, just ring us up and clear it up with us.
I've got a feeling he won't be getting in touch.
Maybe not, but we can hope.
Yeah.
Put us on the map. We didn't actually want to start with a winter break, did we, Aaron? We've got way laid already. Good, 4 minutes in.
Gone off on a tangent already.
Already. We actually wanted to start. In fact, it was Aaron sort of begging me over text to start with this particular topic this week. We wanted to start with the magic or the lost magic of the FA Cup. As you know, you'll have seen this weekend, third round got itself done and dusted, and there weren't too many ties to write home about, particularly not the ones that BBC and BT picked for live broadcast. Can't remember a game of note. I know Aaron mentioned the Preston Arsenal first half was okay, but other than that, a pretty dour affair on all fronts. Aaron's text was as follows. If we can discuss the FA Cup, that'd be cool. Lack of magic and stuff, ways to restore pride, because that's been my main bugbear this past week. So, no, Aaron, run with it.
No, it has. I know that anybody who follows me on Twitter who listens to this might have seen that, you know, I did write a piece for the Mirror, an opinion piece, which I actually scribbled after the very first CB game, and it just became more and more kind of prominent, the thoughts in it, you know, by the time we got to the Sunday night, at least, after watching Tottenham versus Aston Villa. You know, which is just like, at the end of the day, the BBC's picks were West Ham versus City and Tottenham versus Aston Villa. Fixtures that, all right, okay, we'll see them pretty much every week. Maybe, obviously not Villa now, but traditionally we will. Just close games that aren't going to be particularly exciting with, you know, no real stories and glamour and romance behind them. And, you know, it was disappointing that the BBC is like a broadcaster for the nation paid, but you know, they're not after revenue, you know, off these games, you know, and they're picking such disappointing games as that there were games on the FA Cup schedule that had great stories, you know, that would have been great to see on TV. For example, Sutton versus
Wimbledon.
AFC Wimbledon.
Yeah.
First of all, because of what AFC Wimbledon have been through in the FA Cup already this season, the fact that they came back from 2 goals down in the first tie. To get through, they came from 3 goals down.
Who was that against?
Pains me to say it.
Who was that? I forgot that one.
Yeah, no, I haven't.
You've tried.
I've been trying. In the second round, you know, they came back from that, and you know, so they've got a bit of a story. But AFC Wimbledon were formed, and their first ever game was at Sutton United, and in that way, there you've already got a connection. It's a local derby. Sutton United are arguably the greatest giant killers in the history of the FA Cup, you know, and there was a real possibility there for another upset. I mean, the game did finish 0-0.
But I
watched the full highlights, but even knowing the score, just because I was interested to kind of what the occasion was.
Besides the point, though, the end result is besides the point.
Yeah, it's the whole occasion, it's the whole product, the whole package, and I just remember watching it. Thankfully, BT put hour-long highlights on me, you know, which is. Alright, okay, it's not live, it's not the same, but
it's something.
Gander Green Lane, as the ground is there at Sutton, is a superb football ground. We had the pleasure of going down there with Curzon round about exactly a year ago in the FA Trophy. And superb venue, it was packed to the rafters, it was a real buoyant atmosphere. Obviously, by the time it gets half time, the lights are on, so you know the atmosphere, the whole thing just looked incredible. It was a spectacle. It was everything that the FA Cup should be about. And yet, we were deprived of seeing that by some shoddy TV picks.
Yeah. It's the fact that every TV pick involved a Premier League or both Premier League teams on either side. And
normally, when you get to the third round, I understand that you'd want to see a lower league team, you know, against a Premier League team, but Man United versus Reading, you know, wasn't particularly glamorous other than Yap Stam's return, wasn't even.
It was dire, mate. That's a bit about the bush.
That headline worthy.
It was awful. Reading were about as poor a team as I've seen all season.
Yeah. Well, Reading went to Old Trafford. Yeah, most of them players who play for Reading have played at Old Trafford before.
Absolutely.
You know, that's the level they're at.
And Reading are obviously doing well in the Championship.
Yeah. If you want to see a team play Old Trafford, you want it to be a team that haven't, you know, these lads who have never played there before, you know, like this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. And that way they'll give it an extra, you know, 10%. You know, they'll give absolutely everything out on the pitch. And that's what makes, you know, a stunning, exciting FA Cup tie.
Yeah.
And yet the games that got picked for TVs, you know, just didn't include them elements. And, I mean, West Ham versus City, the first one was just absolutely atrocious. It's the first 10 minutes, fine, you know, both teams were going at it. And then West Ham just said, oh no, we can't be bothered anymore. Yeah. And City just passed them to death. Walking as well, walking and passing them to death.
And that's sort of been a pattern of West Ham season, hasn't it?
Yeah, no, they just, they're a bad, bad side.
Yeah, going to get even worse as well with Dimitri Payet.
Yeah, no,
asking to leave.
Absolutely, you know, that's, you know, the last thing that they want, especially when you look at the performance that, you know, they gave against City. It was just, but no, the FA Cup for me, like, something's got to change. I have a way to guarantee that you have your, when I say glamorized, like your David versus Goliath ties. You know, something has to change where you need to be able to encourage more of those sort of ties, more TV-worthy games.
Yeah,
are
why
drawn
is it
out.
A one-off?
Yeah.
Yeah, you need to make these games a one-off. West Ham versus Man City, that game wouldn't automatically be a TV pick in the Premier League.
No. As a matter of fact, it is in a few weeks.
Right. Besides the point, though, yeah. it's not City and Arsenal. It's not the top six playing each other.
If it got played at Saturday 3 p.m, nobody would bat an eye.
Exactly. It's not the derby being played at 3 p.m.
Exactly.
So why would the BBC choose to pick? They have two picks, I think, for the FA Cup. They've not got the majority of the rights. Oh, I don't know if they split it with BT.
They have two, BT have three.
Right, so BT have got the majority. They've only got two picks from each round. I don't see why they'd waste one on an all Premier League average affair. It is just a run-of-the-mill 3 o'clock Premier League game. And I can't understand why they'd waste one of their precious FA Cup picks, because BBC don't have much live support as it is. They're on the bare bones now. This is their marquee tournament, FA Cup. They don't have the England rights. They don't have the England rights, do they? ITV have it?
Yes, yeah.
They don't have England rights. They don't have any other live football other than the FA Cup. And they've wasted one of their picks on a boring, mediocre, mid-level Premier League game. And I can't understand why.
Yeah, I mean...
And the other one was similar as well, Spurs and Villa. All right, Villa are down, but it's a similar game.
I mean, it seems like to me they've just picked games, you know, they've gone for ratings, which is really worrying. That's not what the BBC should be. The BBC should be about embracing the tournament and the competition.
Absolutely.
For what it is. You can kind of understand BT going for maybe Man United. I'd have liked to see maybe a little bit more variation in there. I mean, in fact, no, credit to BT. They've got United as the ratings one. Preston Arsenal was, all right, a reasonable pick.
Yeah.
And fair play, they went to Cambridge versus Leeds.
Liverpool Plymouth as well, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, they did Liverpool Plymouth.
So that's four.
Oh, yeah, they had four.
So, right, four, okay, so, okay. So right, yeah, 4-2 to BT. I forgot about Liverpool Plymouth.
Too many games, bloody hell. but yeah.
Do you know, incidentally, that's like the 50-odd... It's a ridiculous stat, but since the 2004 semi-final of the FA Cup, United have been... Every FA Cup game that Man United have played have been screened live on either the BBC, ITV, Sky or BT.
Yeah,
well, in a row. They've never missed one.
It's kind of not surprising, because you do know that United are going to hit, you know, the numbers. At the end of the day, they are.
And as the holders, I suppose they had to have their game televised live.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, you can kind of understand it from BT's perspective. They are running a company based on viewing figures.
Yeah,
you know,
that's,
so fair enough. The BBC is a lot of disappointing, because you had Sutton versus Wimbledon, you had Wickham versus Stalbridge, which turned out to be a fantastic game, you know, really exciting. Stalbridge brought a level right at the end and then lost it. You had Barrow versus Rochdale.
Yeah.
Barrow, a team who, you know, steeped in history, a proper FA Cup sort of ground. You know, it looks, you know, a bit old fashioned. It would have been a dodgy pitch. It would have been a leveller. That would have been equally exciting. And then Ipswich versus Lincoln. You've got Ipswich who are struggling in the Championship, and Lincoln who are flying, you know, the top of the non-league pyramid. And there was a chance for upset, and Lincoln went and got a draw.
Yeah.
And they took like nearly 5,000 fans. You know, the atmosphere would have sounded great on TV as well. I mean, like, they're the sorts of games, you know, which you want to see. You want to see these stories. You know, you want to learn about these people and these clubs that make British football what it is, not Absolutely. The same old stuff being churned out. And
yeah, it's supposed to be a nice alternative to the Premier League. Because we see the same teams play each other week in, week out. The FA Cup, all right, you're still going to get Premier League teams drawn against Premier League teams, but the idea of the televised games are to pick games that you wouldn't normally see.
Yeah.
It's different from the norm.
Well, you mentioned, obviously, you know, you are going to get Premier League versus Premier League. I was talking to my brother the other day, and we were thinking of like ideas like, right, listen, the FA Cup is what it is. How can we change it? How can, you know, obviously, you don't want to change the FA Cup too much, because if you do change the FA Cup, you will completely lose the magic. So you can't have like a big renovation of the competition. Okay. But there's like little things that you can do. And for me, the FA Cup still has all of its magic up until the third round. All the qualifying rounds are so special. Yep. For phenomenal. I was at Runcorn Town Football Club last night, who play in the North West Counties League Premier Division. I went into their little like tea hut and stuff. They've got on their wall framed the programme from their FA Cup second qualifying round game away at Barrow,
right.
You know, which was the biggest game in their history.
Yeah.
You know, that's what the FA Cup does, you know, even at the second qualifying round.
Yeah.
To clubs of, you know, of that size, you know, they're so proud, they'll display it, you know, that's their big day.
Yeah.
And that goes right the way through to the second round, because, you know, clubs who, you know, as I say, these lucky clubs who get to go so far, and everybody gets the turn. Well, not everybody, but, you know, a lot of clubs...
A lot of averages will say, yeah.
A lot of clubs, you know, will battle their way through there. It's like a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Yeah.
You get to the third round, it's like, okay, yeah, we've got rid of that magic. So for me, what I'd like to see, and what I thought maybe wouldn't kill the competition too much, is for the third round, fourth round, and maybe fifth round, is that you split the teams that are left in. Is the third round 64 teams, I think? I think it was 32 ties, 64 teams left.
So figuring out. Six rounds of quarterfinal. So there's eight there. 16, 32, 64. Yeah.
So 64 teams. I propose that maybe they should seed the draw. And now, I understand one of the magic of the FA Cup is that, oh, you can be drawn against anybody.
Yeah.
But when you're saying, oh, we can be drawn against anybody, it's because you're a lower league team thinking, oh my God, we could be drawn against Manchester United or whatever. That's the feeling of it. So why don't you kind of make that more of a possibility? And you split the draw 32 and 32. Your 32 lower ranked teams, the lowest ranked 32 teams that are left in the competition, you say you are automatically all the home teams.
Okay.
And then just draw them out. Draw the other 32 out. And all right.
So you'd seed the top 32, would you?
Yeah, seed the top 32, but they've got to play away from home.
And they can't play each other?
Yeah, and they can't play each other. So all the big teams are going to play a lower-ranked team.
Right.
So all your top Premier League teams are going to have to go to the likes of, you know, Sutton, Lincoln, Barrow, Curzon Ashton, if we ever get there, or anything like that. And that creates the ties that you want to see. And okay, that way it is a real, real reward for the non-league teams and the lower league teams for when they do get into the third round, because they know that they're going to get a bigger team in there. But that's just one idea I've had anyway.
So from there, would you then continue with the draw, or would it be sort of like a table going across where you know who you are going to play?
No,
I'd stick with the draw.
Yeah, stick with the draw. I think that's the magic.
So from there, would you keep the seeds? Would you reseed them again after the third round?
I'd say maybe you reseed them. In the fourth round, you've got 32 teams left, and split them 16 and 16.
Okay.
Seed the top 16, but again, they've got to play away from home.
Right.
Sort of thing.
Right. And then from there, just let it run its course from there.
Yeah, maybe just have two rounds, you know, a bit of seeding.
Yeah.
Let those magical games happen, and then you can just say, right, you've got to this stage, right, you're into the free-for-all, it's the final stretch, you know, it's the last stretch to the final.
Yeah. The only argument to that would be the flip side of a non-league team actually wanting to draw it to someone equally as poor and give them a better chance of advancing.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think there's many non-league teams who get in to that round and think, oh, we want to see how far we can go.
Well, the example...
They just want to get there, the glamour tie, and that gives them the chance for it.
The example I was going to use was Curzon's draw in the first round this year. You're obviously hoping for a League One team, I think it was up to in the first round.
Yeah.
You actually end up drawing Westfields, which were the lowest ranked team in the draw.
Yeah.
Which was actually second prize, because if you don't get a big team, you want the worst team.
Yeah.
And progress, worst team, all due respect to Westfields, the lowest ranked team.
Yeah.
You want a winnable tie, don't you? So that's the flip side of that.
Yeah, I mean, it was a weird one when we found out we played Westfields here, because ultimately we were disappointed. looking back, you know, we go, in fact, no, that it worked out perfectly because we got to the second round. We sure. then got a TV tie against the, and we still got the sort of game that we wanted to get. But it ultimately, you know, the AFC Wimbledon at home game is what we wanted to get in the first round. You know, that was our, like, well, we've got it. There's not many, you know, non-league teams who will want to get another lower-ranked team, another non-league team, when they get to that stage of the competition. That's just in my honest opinion, especially if you get to the third round, which is obviously where I'm proposing that, you know, the seeding starts. And anyone who gets to that point is there to get the once-in-a-lifetime tie.
Absolutely, and that once-in-a-lifetime tie would actually bring about such a windfall for the clubs as well.
Yeah. I mean,
away from home. Yeah. Oh, no, sorry, that is, you were proposing to be at home.
Yeah, well, that's my other point, which kind of obviously counteracts my argument, is that a lot of these clubs will be thinking, oh my God, we could go to Anfield, we could go to Old Trafford,
right.
And all right, the clubs are going to make a hell of a lot of money off, you know, ticket sales because they get 45% of the gate.
Yeah,
the clubs split,
yeah, they split the top 90%, don't they?
Yeah, the FA take the rest for, which all goes to prize
for
money.
Wembley.
Yeah, well, prize money and pays a bit for Wembley, I'm sure. I've never actually seen the exact breakdown, and I don't think anyone ever will.
No.
But
for good reason as well.
But yeah, that's the only downfall. But for me, I think you've got to, at the end of the day, the clubs are still making good money on on hosting these teams rather than going to them. More money, you know, than they would do off any other standard game. Plus, that you've got the new international TV rights, which has been signed for the FA Cup.
I heard might have been a comment on your article, actually. Somebody in Canada maybe said that they got better TV games than we did in England.
Yeah, they got the games that we wanted to see.
Yeah, so that's just backwards for me.
And which is just utterly bizarre. But I say with the international TV rights deal, when it expands, there's proposals that have since been confirmed by Greg Clark, the FA chairman, saying that he wants to see, rather than, you know, the team who's on TV get that lump of prize, you know, lump of TV money. But bear in mind, this TV deal is worth like £800 million or something like that. It's a huge, huge deal. He wants to see that money, you know, split into the prize money more than the TV money. So all the clubs are going to make more money off prize money if that goes through anyway. And you're still going to make more money, you know, by hosting these bigger teams, you know, if you're a lower league club. So it does ruin the dream of like these players. Oh, I've always wanted to play Old Trafford. I always wanted to play Anfield. But I think you've got to sacrifice that now, at this point, in the name of the competition and restoring it to what we want the competition to be as a viewing product. Because at the moment, it's not what the FA Cup is about, and it's not offering us the magic, the romance that, you know, we want to see. And listen, we all want to see Manchester United go to Harrogate Railway Athletic on a dodgy, boggy pitch and struggle to pass the ball around.
Yeah.
And that is what would make true entertainment for me, and that is what would restore the magic of the FA Cup. And it's what I want to say. I need to see something change, because even you look at even the fourth round draw now, it's not that great, and the TV picks haven't been announced yet. I believe they've been decided, but they haven't been announced.
Well, they've had a lot of stick for this round, so
yeah.
I'm
so
they'll sort of heed the warning a little bit.
Yeah.
What I was saying to you off air was, in my opinion, in terms of, not in terms of prestige and history and everything else, because the FA Cup is what it is, and it's the most prestigious cup competition probably in the world in terms of history.
Yeah.
But in terms of actual football and excitement, I'd say the League Cup has actually surpassed the FA Cup. In terms of ties that it's produced, in terms of the format, the extra time and penalties format. In the earlier rounds, I actually get more enjoyment out of a lot of League Cup games than I have out of the FA Cup in recent seasons.
No, there is definitely a case for that. I mean, I don't know whether it's because traditionally expectation levels for the League Cup have been so low, and now suddenly, you know, there's been a few good games and people have been pleasantly surprised. I don't know whether that's, you know, partially played a part. Because I don't know whether it's because of the mockery that is this Checker Trade Trophy or EFL Trophy, whatever they want to call it.
Yeah.
You now actually take for granted the fact that the League Cup is still a respectable competition. You know, I don't know whether some of that has maybe played a part. I saw an interesting point on Twitter. Someone said, I think it was one of the maybe the Daily Mail's online editor, or might have been the the newspaper editor, but someone from the Mail anyway, suggested that maybe it's time for the FA Cup and League Cup to merge. And it's interesting to see what elements of which, you know, competitions, you know, you take out which, because there's some elements of the League Cup which I really like. I don't like midweek games. For me, the FA Cup has to be played on a Saturday.
I agree.
I'd like that.
To maintain the importance of the tournament.
Yeah, precisely. I think the FA Cup shouldn't be moved. However, then I also look at things like a two-legged semi-final, you know, rather than sending them to Wembley. You know, I think is great. I love two-legged ties, and that's one of the great things about the League Cup.
At a neutral ground? Two legs home away.
Right.
Do you agree with the semi-final being played at Wembley in the FA Cup?
No, not for me. I think it should be
reserved for the final.
Yeah, there's no real kind of prestige there. I went to the FA Cup final in 2011 when Man City played Stoke.
Yeah.
And I remember speaking to some City fans before the game. I wasn't at the semi-final against United.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't there. And a lot of them said, well, yeah, it's City at Wembley again, but we were here 3 weeks ago.
Exactly.
And now we're playing Stoke rather than Man United. It's like, this is meant to be the final and the big day. Yeah.
Well, the cup final was the semi-final wasn't it?
Yeah, and they're not as motivated as they should be for the FA Cup final. So it does kind of devalue the final.
I mean, I miss playing at grounds like Villa Park. I mean, I don't mean me personally, I've never played at Villa Park, but, you know, my team, say Man United, we always used to play semi-finals at Villa Park. The Ryan Giggs goal, Villa Park.
Yeah.
You know, a neutral ground, doesn't matter where it is, it might be the Etihad one year. But that, maintain the prestige and keep away from Wembley until the final and make it a special ground to go to.
But it'd be nice to see some of these kind of traditional English grounds that are still standing, for the likes of Villa Park, Hillsborough, maybe St James's Park up in Newcastle.
Goodison.
Yeah, exactly. You know, just things that, you know, have got reasonable capacity, have a decent atmosphere, and take the true British competition and let it be played in the proper British grounds.
Absolutely.
And then you can take it to the home of British football. All right, okay, it is now a modern stadium, but it is still the home of English football.
Yeah, and make it a marquee event again.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we all know the reason that the semi-finals are played at Wembley is to try and recoup some of the costs that have been forked out to pay for Wembley.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean,
that can be the only reason.
Yeah.
But I think that's wrong. And I think that it should be restored to a neutral ground.
Yeah.
And more than that is the logistics side of it. You've just mentioned it there, Man United, Man City, 2011 semi-final, traipse down to Wembley.
Yeah.
It's the two teams from Manchester.
Yeah.
Why couldn't it be played at Anfield or Goodison Park or Villa Park? Wherever.
Yeah.
Why make the 200-300-mile trip to London and back?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously understandable. As football fans and, you know, from the position we're in, we're not going to look at the finances because we don't see the finances, or at least we don't think we see the finances. You know, maybe.
So we pay the finances, ticket fees.
Yeah, but maybe some of them are put back, you know, into grants and, you know, football foundation stuff. And listen, there's a chance we are, without knowing it, are actually seeing some of the rewards.
Sure.
But we're not seeing much of it. Regardless of what happens, we're not seeing much of it. And because we don't know what we're getting for our money by taking it to Wembley, you know, we don't care about the finances. Obviously, I'm sure when you're on the other side of the table, then they'll be panicking, they'll be doing all they can to make money. And it's a shame that they're actually kind of salvaging their own great competition and some of the great history of the competition to kind of sort out finances, which is a shame when, you know, there is so much money in football, and yet having to make a little bit more money is kind of killing off one of our competitions, it's a bit of a shame.
Can you clear something up for me, by the way? This is something I've been wondering about for a few weeks. Why did Spurs play the Champions League home games at Wembley this season?
It's because of the works which have been going on at Tottenham's ground. You know, the corner's partially been taken out.
Right.
I don't know whether you've seen it.
Yeah.
Because obviously they've already, I don't know if you've seen it, there's a great aerial shot of the new stadium kind of being built around
White Hart Lane. Right, and they're just going
to take out the inside. Yeah, they've had to take out like a corner of the current White Hart Lane.
So it doesn't meet with UEFA regulations.
Yeah, it doesn't fit UEFA ground grading.
I thought it would be something like that.
So they had to move out, and they'll be moving out officially at the end of this season of the current White Hart Lane.
Yeah.
there's a chance, and there was a suggestion that they could play in the new stadium as soon as next season, but you know, in like a partially built version of the new stadium, because they're ahead of schedule.
But like Stamford Bridge was in the old days.
Yeah, it sounds like they're probably going to go and do a year at Wembley, but there's still a possibility that they might go straight from one ground into the next one, right next door.
The FA will probably do all they can to make sure it is Wembley.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they will. They'll find something to fail ground grading on, I'm sure.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but I enjoyed the period between the old Wembley and the new Wembley when the England team actually toured the country and played at the various different grounds. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, no, I loved it, and I liked what they did before the Euros, and they went up to like the stadium and like they played one of the Etihad and stuff, and that was kind of like nice and refreshing. And
it was,
I remember between the two Wembleys, I watched two England games at Old Trafford, one against Jamaica, one against Hungary, one against Jamaica where Peter Crouch introduced the robot.
Absolutely.
And but the games that I wouldn't really have ever seen. Yeah. And one of the greatest England moments in my generation, maybe the greatest, was David Beckham's free kick against Greece.
Absolutely.
And I don't think that would have been quite the same happening if it happened at the new Wembley as it is now. It's the fact that Old Trafford and that stadium, that atmosphere, actually, I think, kind of made that moment what it was.
Absolutely. So the magic of the FA Cup, it's been lost, or it needs to be found.
From the third round onwards?
Yeah, okay, up to the 18, 15, however many games it is to play up to the third round.
No, it's still there. It's still there for them guys, for the little guys.
Yeah, for the plucky underdogs. They've still got the magic of the cup, but once the third round commences, it's not been great in the past few years, but Aaron's got a master plan to straighten it all out.
Yeah, just need to make sure that Greg Clark and co are listening to this podcast. So if anybody has any links to the FA, then you know, do make sure that you are shoving a copy of this under their door,
absolutely.
Please.
Drop them a nice email and tell them to have a listen. Was it your idea to expand the World Cup to 48 teams?
It wasn't my idea, but I'm maybe a little bit more receptive to that idea than some of the other people. I think they got a lot. There was a lot of bad press, and there's a lot of people moaning about it being increased. But
you know, the best one I saw was it's just another 15 teams for England to finish behind in the World Cup, which is
well it's true. Oh well, no, don't worry. We're gonna have a 4-week winter break, and that'll solve that one.
Hey.
But no, I
yeah. What do you make of it? In case you missed it, the news this week is that FIFA have voted. Was it a unanimous vote, or at least an overwhelming majority? That the from 2026 the World Cup will be increased from 32 teams to 48 teams, moving into 16 groups of three, which means there will be a Group P for the first time.
Group P, bloody hell! Look at that.
Group P. So there will be a Group P for the first time from 2016. 16 groups of three, and there's also talk that this hasn't been confirmed, as far as I know, that the group games will be decided on penalties if in the event it runs to a draw.
Yeah,
I don't think that's concrete, but I think that's looking the way it's going to go. So Aaron, you were saying you are actually more receptive to this idea than the majority of the British press and public.
Yeah, and I think it's because I look at the group stage of the Euros this summer, and I think the group stage actually was dull.
Yeah,
of the Euros, it wasn't great viewing. It was. It was kind of tough to watch because I don't know what it was. There was just something about it that I just kind of thought, it's not particularly exciting. I wanted to get out of the group stages quite quickly. Now, all right, you're not going to get out of the group stages too quickly because there's so many groups.
Right.
You know, even if there are three teams, you know, so you're going to have that. But by expanding the competition in the way it is, you are actually adding another knockout round. To have a last 32 knockout round, then last 16, then quarters, then semis, then the final stuff. Actually, you're adding another 16 games of knockout football in the greatest cup competition, greatest international cup competition.
Well edited.
Because, you know, it. I can't see what is the major downside of that. It's going to potentially create more upsets as well because you are, with kind of three team groups, you are actually giving a little bit more hope to the underdog nations. They think if they can scrape one result, they can get in. And you're actually, the whole dynamic of the whole thing, I actually think can work really, really well. I love the sound of more knockout football.
Knockout football is absolutely the best kind of football.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and I may be a little bit more against, you know, penalty shootouts to decide the group stages.
Well, as an England fan, absolutely we're against that. We can no longer settle for a 0-0 draw.
Well, no, a penalty shootout for me is not like, oh, we'll play 90 minutes, oh, and then we'll toss a coin to see who wins. It's not football. Like, when you're deciding the biggest competition in the world, you should be deciding it on football.
Yeah.
And some kind of provision needs to be, you know, made in place in case, you know, teams are level, you know, at the end of the at the group stages, you know, on points and goal difference and stuff. Not quite sure what it is. I've not had a quite revolutionary thought about that, you know, as I have the FA Cup. But so I'm sure something will come to me. But I'll be against penalties. But overall, I'm not too bad. I mean, look, for example, the fact that it's going to give more opportunities to, say, African nations.
And Scotland.
And Scotland. And Scotland, obviously.
Third world countries. Yeah.
But I look at UEFA's, I think UEFA get 13, maybe 14 teams in the current format in a 32-team World Cup. And bear in mind, FIFA is made of 52 or 53 nations. Africa has got nearly 60 nations.
Yeah.
And yet they get, what, 4 spots?
Yeah, the allocations, it's wrong.
I understand. Yeah, you're looking at the coefficient, you're looking at the, you know, the quality of the teams and stuff like that. Yeah, I get that. But, you know, you want to be giving these nations a chance. There's a lot of nations there who are never going to get the chance. And, you know, hopefully over the next few weeks, the Africa Cup of Nations will start, you know, and we'll, you know, we'll see that there are talented teams in there. And I'm sure that, you know, there'll be a few surprise packages.
Well, people still talk about Cameroon from 1990 qualifying and making as big an impact on the tournament as they did.
Yeah.
And in a slightly lesser and a more comical light, the Zaire team of 1974. the whistle goes for the free kick against them, and the chap runs out of the wall and just punts it right into Rose Ed.
Just doesn't have a clue what he's doing. And he's playing at the World Cup.
But superb viewing.
Yeah, no, great.
That was just one of the best bits of football I've ever seen. Yeah. But that's the point you're making, isn't it?
Yeah. The great thing with the African team is you don't know what you're going to get. You normally get a dodgy goalkeeper, but you also get, you know, like some, you know, it's maybe a little bit more raw, a few of them fly into tackles a bit more. Some of them are superb technical footballers, and they're all normally like pretty quick and pretty strong as footballers as well.
Yeah.
So when you're pitting that against, say, a team like Spain, who, you know, might, you know, pass someone to death or things, you know, they're not actually the strongest team in the world. The more you have them, you can create potentially a better spectacle.
It's an X factor, isn't it?
There's some great teams in Africa. You look at Ghana, Senegal, Algeria, the Ivory Coast, Cameroon, if they're full strength. I know a lot of players have pulled out of AFCON. But you know, there's no reason why they shouldn't be showcased, you know, the World Cup.
Yep.
And for me, as I say, I'm actually quite receptive to the 48-team World Cup. And at the end of the day, it is more football in the summer. This summer coming up, we're going to moan like mad that there's no football.
Absolutely.
And
it'll still be over the same amount of days as well. I think 32 days is the goal to squeeze all the games in.
Yeah.
There's going to be 80 games over 32 days. That's just, for any football fan, that is Christmas come early.
Suits me. I'll book a couple of weeks off work and just get out of bed, watch 4 games of football back to back, go back to bed, and repeat for 2 weeks.
Football repeat, exactly.
And then I'll hopefully be in a position where work will send me out to the final and happy days.
Or you can report on England winning a penalty shootout against the Germans.
Don't get too optimistic.
Yeah, this format isn't going to suit England too well. In terms of the penalty shootout in the groups, and two, there were more teams to finish behind, as I mentioned before. Yeah.
England aren't very good at knockout football. We've got knocked out by Iceland. All right,
no, we are good at knockout Iceland football. We always get knocked out. So, no, we are good at it.
Right, yeah. Well, fair point. But what about yourself? Have you had any like objections to the bigger World Cup as such? Or
I'm not against it. At first I thought, wow, 48 teams, for me it's just, it depends in what light you look at it. It's obviously more revenue for FIFA. Yeah. And the fans are going to struggle with the logistics of one, it's going to be in America, Mexico and Canada, supposedly.
Yep.
So they're going to have to climb over some bloody big walls to get over into Mexico with a certain Donald J. Trump in office. Yeah. The logistics of an 80-team, 16-group World Cup is going to be challenging for the fans. Not the armchair fans. The armchair fans are going to really enjoy it, but for the actual dedicated fans that will go and attend this tournament, it's not going to be easy for them. It's just the logistics side of it that I struggle with. The actual spectacle on a football side, it should be superb. The only thing that I'm sort of struggling with a little bit is that one team will sit out every round of group games because there'll always be a team spare. I don't know if it'll be a benefit if a team has to play two games back to back and then they have a prolonged rest before the knockout period, or they play the first group game, they have a rest, play the third group game. You know, I think one team may have an advantage there in terms of a rest between their first and second group games. Somebody will have to play game one and two, and somebody will have to play two and three.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you are at that level of football, though, and you're at the level of kind of sports science and things that are included in international football, I understand that the likes of maybe England, France, Germany will be more advanced than, say, Burkina Faso if they get there.
Yeah.
But, you know, they'll still be at a certain level, and I think they'll still be able to plan training regimes to kind of deal with that. And at the end of the day, they're not too unusual of patterns, you know, having, you know, a little bit of a rest in the middle, or, you know, playing two games reasonably quick. It's just the same as playing maybe Saturday midweek.
Yeah.
In the Premier League, I don't think it's I don't think it's too bad.
No. I think, to be honest, I think once we're there, once we are in 2026 and we've got the debacles of Qatar and Russia out of the way, we'll be actually just thankful that it's in a country that that can put on a good World Cup. They've obviously got the platform to do it. The Americas, Canada, Mexico, North America. They've obviously got a platform to do it. They've got the infrastructure to do it. And providing it does go there, I think we'll all be happy to actually see the World Cup back where it should be, and not in Qatar for one, because that's another podcast altogether.
Yeah. The only way I look at the World Cup myself is just think, what are the kickoff times going to be in England? Like, for us,
exactly.
That's the only thing I'm concerned about. Is obviously I want
to,
obviously, ideally for me it would be first game kicking off at 11 a.m. and then last game kicking off at 8 p.m. at night. That would be ideal for me.
But 11:25, 8, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I know it'd be tough, but
ideally.
Yeah.
Why haven't England won a World Cup bid? We haven't had a major tournament for 21 years now. We haven't had the World Cup for 51 years.
Well, because we're paying off Wembley rather than paying bribes, isn't it? So.
Well, yeah, that's true. Obviously needs to put a couple more zeros on his cheque to... Obviously,
FIFA are...
The cleanest federation.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, anyway. Mr. Blatter's out of office. Yeah.
I quite like Infantino, you know. I don't know what he's about in...
Is he the chap that used to do the Champions League draw?
Yeah, the guy who looks like the thumb.
Yeah, well, all I'm thinking is, how has he gone from making the Champions League draw to FIFA president? Do you know what I mean? It's like getting Steve Claridge in as FIFA as boss of the FA.
You know, I think, I mean, he had like quite a big role, anyway. Was he like technical director or something like that? He was technical director of UEFA, I think he was.
Yeah.
So he had a reasonably important role, anyway.
I suppose he's had the path cleared, hasn't he, with Platini and Blatter being subjected to a few.
Yeah. And I quite like seeing, you know, a president who is actually looks like to me he's trying to clear it up, he's trying to clear the name, but he's doing it with a smile on his face and looks like he's enjoying himself.
Yep.
I think a few people disagree with me because a lot of people have heard of say that, oh, he's smug Infantino guy and, you know, things like that. But, you know, for me, he looks all right. And I understand that thinking with the 48-team World Cup is mainly because he knows it will make another £500 million minimum, is what they've said.
Well,
like, that's the minimum that they will make.
It's going to sit well with the board of directors of FIFA.
Yeah, and that is the main reason why everyone's gone, well, yeah, we can definitely do that.
Yeah.
But, and it also opens up his relations with the countries, you know, that can be effective for him. So your Africa's, your Asian nations and... Middle East, you know, it opens up connections with them. But No, I still like him. I don't know what I don't have a reason to dislike
absolutely
him.
Absolutely not. If he's squeaky clean, mate, and he keeps his head above water and keeps his nose tidy, no problems.
I saw some pictures the other day. Well, I won't say I saw some guys there. I wrote an article on his pictures. Before the FIFA awards in Zurich, earlier this week,
the green carpet.
I didn't actually see the awards.
Apparently, it was a green carpet.
Okay, I'd finished work and gone home and forgotten about football altogether by that point. But I saw some pictures of him playing. They played like a Legends match, and Infantino and Alexander Seferin, who's the UEFA president now, playing football alongside Diego Maradona, Miguel Salgado, and players like that. I was looking at myself and actually, you know, Infantino's just like a kid having the best time playing like with his heroes. I was like, that looks awesome. Yeah. Like he's giving Maradona a high five and stuff. Like, just quality. Like,
he looks really a bit like Dermot Gallagher, don't you think?
Yeah, he does. There's a picture of him as well in that set showing a red card to Alexander Seferin, the UEFA president.
It is him.
And I was thinking about it now, like, yes, it does look like
Dermot Infantino.
Yeah.
It could well be Dermot in disguise.
Oh, well.
Let's see how long we've been rambling. 46 minutes it's just ticked over to.
Oh, okay, well.
Which was our aim for this podcast.
Yeah,
I said to Aaron, if you know what, if we've got a few more topics, but if we rattle on to 45 minutes and we're still going on the World Cup and the FA Cup, we'll call it that.
Yeah. Well, it's a nice little cup special then now, isn't it?
Yeah, we could. Yeah, we wouldn't even mention the Premier League.
Exactly. Let's save that for another time, because we said Chelsea. Oh, no, we did! We did, right, we are going to just briefly mention the Champions League now.
Okay.
Every time we've said on this on a podcast, oh yeah, it looks like they're going to go and do something, we said on the last podcast, yeah, it looks like Chelsea and they are going to run away with it.
Yeah.
They got battered by Tottenham. Yeah, we've done it again.
It just seems to be the touchline curse. I think everything we say, just the opposite happens. So,
yeah.
So City are going to win the league. And the Champions League.
Yeah, I cannot wait for United to get in the top four. Hey.
Yeah, well, probably won't anyway. But no, it does seem to happen. It's a funny old game. But yeah, we are just about going to leave it there. Thank you very much to Aaron for taking the time once again to join us. Always great to have your company. And thank you very much for listening at home to episode 9 of Touchline. You can follow us on Twitter at Zip Sports Media. You can follow Aaron on Twitter at Aaron Flan and at Mirror Football for all his work. Keep in touch with the website zipsportsmedia.com and be sure to listen out for episode 10 coming to you next week. Thank you very much for listening.